It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the elements of wrongful death litigation now. Who can sue? How judges are handling these cases amid high-profile lawsuits moving through Wisconsin. In 2021, a jury acquitted Kyle Rittenhouse of all criminal charges for killing two men and injuring another during the 2020 protests in Kenosha. But Rittenhouse still faces legal trouble. He and others are being sued over Rittenhouse's fatal and non-fatal shootings. Call in with your questions about wrongful death lawsuits and how to judge the merits of these cases. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Aaron Aiken is a personal injury attorney with the Minneapolis law firm Schwebel, Getz & Sieben. He's licensed to practice in Minnesota and Wisconsin. Aaron, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me, Kate. Good morning.
Good morning. So this month, a federal judge ruled the wrongful death lawsuit against Kyle Rittenhouse and Kenosha police can proceed. How does this civil litigation differ from criminal prosecution in this case?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. And it's one that's fairly common, I guess, in some civil cases where there's a criminal element. And obviously, in this case, with the criminal cases against Kyle Rittenhouse being adjudicated already, that doesn't preclude the civil lawsuit from being brought. There are different standards of care. There are different elements of the cases. So what happened in the criminal case, really, and the judge said in allowing these cases to proceed, that they could on the merits with new standards and new claims.
Do civil suits have overlapping, like, witnesses or testimony with criminal investigations?
Yeah, of course they do. And frankly, in the majority of my cases where there is a criminal element, a lot of times we're kind of hamstrung by the fact that we don't have access to a lot of the information that we really need to bring these civil cases because the criminal prosecution takes precedence. So in any case, not just this case that we're talking about here, but let's just say in an automobile accident where someone is killed and there's allegations that the defendant really should be charged with something criminally, you know, the state reports, the police reports, the reconstructions, the witness statements, all those things go from the investigating entities into the hands of the prosecutors, who then will determine if charging is appropriate. And if charging is appropriate, that the defendant is charged and then the criminal process plays out. During that, on the civil side, frequently, in fact, most of the time, we just do not have access to most of those documents that we would consider to be critical on the civil side, right? Just from like I say, the reconstruction reports, the witness statements that the police took, and then even access to the criminal defendant. On the civil side, of course, if you start a civil lawsuit right away and you want to depose the defendant with criminal charges hanging out there, they're very commonly just going to plead the fifth and not answer your questions. So just as an overall on the civil side, we most commonly will need the dust to settle on the criminal side before we proceed with civil cases. So the order of things that are happening here in the Rittenhouse case, certainly not unusual at all.
A bit more with timeline here as well, as you say, for the dust to settle for the criminal proceedings. You know, attorneys for the man who was shot and injured by Rittenhouse, they've asked for more time to find and serve Rittenhouse with their lawsuit. How crucial to court proceedings is the delivery of a civil lawsuit to a defendant?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, everybody's got their preconceived notions about what service of process is, right? If a process server shows up at your front door, generally that's not a very good day for you, right? So in this case, and interestingly, on the initial wrongful death claim, they had a lot of trouble with service on Kyle Rittenhouse in that case. In fact, attorneys and process servers in that case submitted affidavits to the court saying that they spent more than 100 hours in multiple states looking for Kyle Rittenhouse. And the official start to any lawsuit, right, is being personally served, right? The defendant being served by one means or another in order to actually kick the lawsuit off. And most of the time in Wisconsin, you're going to need personal service. So interestingly, in that case, in the wrongful death case, they looked from all over the country And what ended up happening, at least according to the court filings and the judge's decision, is that they found his sister in the state of Florida living with his mother. And the process server in that case asked his sister, and it's sort of a process server tactic, I think, when is he going to be home? And she acknowledged that she did not know. And in that case, it was enough to show that he was residing there. And of course, Kyle Rittenhouse's attorneys challenged service in that case. But the judge said, you know, it was obvious that he was evading and that would suffice. So they have to, in Wisconsin, go through this sort of reasonable diligence standard. They can't just stop if they think that there is a way to find him personally before they go to other methods of service. But in this, in the injury case, it seems fairly clear that well, I don't know what the judge is going to do, of course, but it would seem to me that the judge could continue to grant extensions until they find him.
Talking about wrongful death lawsuits with Aaron Aiken, a personal injury attorney, you can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Aaron, are there time limits for bringing a wrongful death case?
There are. I mean, in Wisconsin, generally, you're going to have a 3-year statute of limitations on wrongful death cases. That's reduced to 2 years in the case of an automobile accident, right? But yeah, generally, there are going to be those time limits in place to bring a wrongful death case in Wisconsin.
Wrongful death cases, they seek to determine if a loss of life resulted from someone's negligence to use reasonable care. So how is that bar? Like, is negligence a different standard from what must be proven in a criminal case?
Yeah, in the vast majority of the wrongful death cases that I pursue, the first trigger in order for a defendant to actually owe the family money for the loss that they sustained is negligence. And negligence is a really simple standard. It's just it's being reasonable. It's a simple reasonableness standard. So negligence is doing something that a reasonable person would not do, or failing to do something that a reasonable person would do. So let's just say in the case of an automobile accident, right? Somebody blows a red light and kills somebody. You know, you could say that they were negligent in running that red light, right? But that's the trigger in almost any personal injury and wrongful death lawsuit, is just finding negligence. And that's just a simple reasonableness standard. And in the civil cases, they need to find that by a preponderance of the evidence, more likely than not, versus in a criminal case, everybody knows the beyond a reasonable doubt standard, right? Where you need to prove that before taking somebody's liberty away and putting them in jail. Civil side, the burden to prove these elements of any case is a lot less.
But how do you know the difference between an act of negligence versus civil rights violations, when someone's civil rights have been violated?
Boy, so these the Rittenhouse cases, they're brought under the 1983, the civil rights claim, saying basically that his due process, he was deprived of his due process rights, right? And a jury is going to have to look at that and conclude it. And the judge in allowing these cases to proceed didn't weigh in on whether or not they can do that. That should be pretty clear on. Even in the claims of negligence against Mr. Rittenhouse, the judge said, you know, basically, I'm not sure how they would proceed, because it would appear that this was intentional. But at the same time, I'm going to allow it to proceed because a jury could conclude that. So in these initial motions that were brought, you know, that the standard that the judge used was much, much different.
Hmm. We learn about wrongful death litigation here in Wisconsin with attorney Aaron Aiken, taking us deeper into the damages, who's entitled to file this type of suit, what negligence means. Call in with your questions, your comments about wrongful death cases, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn how wrongful death litigation works in Wisconsin, considering lawsuits against Kyle Rittenhouse, City of Kenosha officials, and others stemming from the 2020 Kenosha protests in the aftermath of the police shooting of Jacob Blake. Call in with your questions, your comments about civil trials for wrongful death and how they work, 800-642-1234. We have personal injury attorney Aaron Aiken, who stays with us. Let's go to Julie in Madison. Julie, what would you like to share?
I have a question. I'm retired law enforcement, and I'm wondering if there's a comparison here that would be helpful in the long run to improve the situation. What I'm hearing on your show is that people might do something wrong and then find that they could hide and successfully avoid. In sensitive crimes in the past that I worked in, children who were abused, were the statute of limitations was so short that they couldn't even report after they were adults. And then that statute of limitations changed and extended. I'm wondering if you think that changing laws such that, or proposing legislation that doesn't allow for as long a limitation, or I should say a longer time for people to sue would be helpful to avoid the problem of people doing something wrong and then hiding wherever they can in the country and the statute of limitations running out.
Julie, thank you. Aaron.
Yeah, Julie, thanks for calling in. And that is a good question. And I'm going to address it in terms of civil cases that the victims of sex abuse could pursue. Right. There are statute of limitations, and they're especially difficult, including children who sometimes won't come forward with what happened until later in life. In fact, many jurisdictions across the country, including here in Minnesota, I believe it was in 2016, reopened the statute of limitations for 3 years to make it basically unlimited for people to come forward from 2016 to 2019 with accusations against their abusers. So yeah, it is really unfortunate, especially in that case. And Julie, that's a good question, because you bring up one of the most difficult statute of limitations questions, and certainly something that legislatively would need to be addressed, right? Because that's the statute of limitations is set by the legislatures in Wisconsin and Minnesota. In fact, I think that there was some discussion about this a few years ago in Wisconsin. I'm not sure what happened to it, to be frank, but you are correct. That statute of limitations, that's an ultimate bar to those claims, and one that really, really is tragic for the victims.
When Minnesota opened it up, what did you experience?
Yeah, there was a huge uptick in those claims. And I personally handled several of them. So people were able to come forward. In the case I was handling, we uncovered, you know, unfortunately, many other victims of the same abuser. And, you know, it was an opportunity for those people to come forward and say what had happened to them. And then interestingly, when they get brought up that far later in life, you know, 30 years down the line, you can really, instead of looking forward and projecting what's going to happen to the person, you can look back and see the impact that it's had on their lives.
Let's look at caps on damages. State law,
sure,
here in Wisconsin for financial damages, you know, being awarded in wrongful death cases. What is the policy reasoning for having caps on damages?
Boy, as far as policy, I'm not positive, but I do know in Wisconsin, you know, you have non-economic caps on wrongful death. Okay. So the state of Wisconsin has said for non-economic losses, that's comfort, aid, companionship, support for your husband, your child, whoever it is that had been killed, that's capped at an adult. If you're 18 or older, that's capped at $350,000 in non-economic losses. For a child, the state of Wisconsin says that's $500,000. Comparing that to Minnesota, where we do not have those caps right now. Bear in mind, those are just non-economic losses, aid, comfort, companionship, support. That doesn't include economic losses, right? So let's say a 40-year-old father was making $100,000 a year, was killed, and his wife brings a wrongful death lawsuit on his behalf. She could still collect that and my math is not great, especially on the radio, but I think I can do 25 times 100 so that they can collect that 2.5 million in economic losses. Mm. But then the non-economic caps, you see in cases I've handled at Wisconsin, they're just, boom, that's what it's worth, $350,000, right?
So how do you calculate the person who's killed, their life expectancy and the economic losses caused by the wrongful death?
Boy, yeah. So some of it is simple math, like the one I just said to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But other times it's more complicated. The both in Minnesota and Wisconsin, they'll tell you how long you're supposed to live in our jury guidelines. So the judge will say, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, he was 40. He has a life expectancy of 33 years. On top of that, that's the expectation. They can deviate upwards and downwards if they had different health issues, whatnot. For bringing in economic losses, we always will bring in vocational experts or economic experts, because most of the time, you have to factor in their consumption. You have to factor in their career, inflation, all sorts of things that aren't as easy as the 25 times 100,000, which, Kate, I really hope I got right.
But does the lack of limits on damage payouts result, do you think, in more wrongful death cases in Minnesota?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, I've never consulted with a potential wrongful death client in Wisconsin and had them say, oh, geez, I'm not going to pursue it because there's this $350,000 or $500,000 cap. And that's just my view. But I've never had someone say, no, I'm not going to do this because of that.
We're talking about wrongful death lawsuits with Aaron Aiken, a personal injury attorney. You can join in along the way at 800-642-1234. Dwayne and Weston called regarding the jury size of criminal cases that involve civil wrongful deaths. And Dwayne is wondering, does a jury have to be anonymous?
Does a jury have to be anonymous? I think in some cases, and I should say, I'm not positive on that answer, but in some cases, especially in high profile cases, the judges are going to do their best to sequester the jurors and make sure that people don't find out about who they are. In fact, I think there was during the Rittenhouse criminal case, I think that there was an issue about some members of the press following the jury, and the judge, I think if you really don't want to make a judge mad like that when they're doing their best to protect people who, nobody has ever called me with a jury summons and said, hey, Aaron, I am so excited about going to jury duty next week. What do I need to do to make sure I get on the panel? No. So the jury really, in my view, ultimately needs to be respected. Their privacy needs to be respected. These are our neighbors, our friends, our relatives that are taking time, real time out of their, everybody's got a busy day to go in and do their job. So in my view, the judges and everybody involved should do our level best to protect their privacy.
You mentioned high profile litigation, and I want to land on Alec Baldwin and Rust, the receiving civil lawsuits here, charged, with involuntary manslaughter over the death of the cinematographer for the film Rust. And so in October, the production company announced Baldwin settled a civil suit brought by the family of Helena Hutchins. And then this month, we're seeing the cinematographer's sister and parents file a separate suit. Is that, different family members bringing different lawsuits, is that common?
And I should say, I think that happened in New Mexico. So I'm not sure when it comes in New Mexico. In Minnesota, we have one person, the trustee for the next of kin, who's appointed by the court, who has sole authority to bring the case, right? In Wisconsin, it can be a variety of different family members based on their relationship. It's laid out in statute to spouses, kids, parents, that sort of thing. And they could ultimately bring their own cases in Wisconsin. They would be consolidated by any motion of the court, because obviously it's hard to address the full exposure if you're only doing one at a time. I should say I don't know anything, frankly, about New Mexico law. there are a variety of different reasons that people would settle a civil case, though I should say that, not just specifically in this case. And any settlement I've ever been involved in with respect to how it would impact the criminal case, I have, I guess I shouldn't say never, but hardly ever seen a civil settlement where there's an admission of wrongdoing, right? So it wouldn't be like you'd say, hey, we're going to settle this case, but then I'm admitting that these criminal elements, nobody would ever, I can't imagine, at least anyone with counsel would do that.
Aaron, thank you for joining us.
No problem, Kate. It was a pleasure being here.
Aaron Aiken is a personal injury attorney with the Minneapolis law firm Schwebel, Getz & Sieben. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.